This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. My stepfather used to play guitar in the orchestra for a summer stock theater company near Boston. My brother and I were very little, and we went to a lot of the performances. We saw Man of La Mancha so many times that I can still sing every note of every song in that musical. People used to look at my parents pretty strangely when I started breaking out the lyrics, "I was spawned in a ditch by a mother who left me there." I can't promise that I won't sing a few bars today, but I will try to hold myself back. Summer theater has a special feel all of its own. It draws enthusiastic crowds eager to get out for an evening, and it draws actors and artists who often have 9-to-5 day jobs and who endure long practices and late nights to engage in a ritual that has a lot of meaning in their lives. Today on Vermont Edition, we are going to celebrate summer theater. Do you have memories or stories about your own acting career? Do you make a habit of going to performances around Vermont each summer? Tell us about your experiences. You can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. If you're in a summer theater troupe or company and you'd like to post what's happening this summer with your group, you can also do that at vpr.net. If you click on Vermont Edition, you can post what's happening with your company there. Dina Janis is Artistic and Executive Director of the Dorset Theater Festival, and she's on the line with us first today. Hi, Dina.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I understand that you had about 250 people show up for a staged reading that you did last week. Is that unusual?
Yes. It was very exciting. We usually get anywhere from 70 to 100 people for these new play readings that we do. We do a lot of new play development, but this was really exciting. Teresa Rebeck had a new play that we were reading, and Alfre Woodard was here to do the workshop and then do the reading. And a wonderful director, a very well-known director named John Doyle, came in to direct. So it may have just been a combination of things, and the fact that the new play development we're doing is sort of starting to take off, I guess. We were very surprised and we were thrilled.
What do you love about summer theater?
Well, I love the interchange between the local community and the people who come up from New York and Boston and all over the world, really, a lot of Canadians, and just the kind of conversations that are able to be had around the ideas that a play provokes. And it's really interesting, and it's a great way of building community, and I love that, the excitement of having those new people come in and see what we do and share it with the local community as well.
For you as artistic director and executive director, how high is the stress level at this time of year for you?
Well, you know, it's kind of a, we do 5 main stage plays in 2 months. So housing, you know, our staff and interns, a huge group of people that come in from all over the country. So you kind of have to be very organized, I guess. It's a little bit like a military operation. But truthfully, I mean, I'm doing what I love. I love what I do. So there really isn't a day that I don't feel, no matter how hectic it gets, just absolutely so fortunate to be doing something like this.
Oh, I don't know, Dina. There must be a few days where you're grinding your teeth. Come on.
Well, last week was an example where we were, our entire staff had arrived on Tuesday and the reading was on Thursday. And when we started seeing the calls coming in for these tickets, we realized, okay, we have to get our cafe up. We have to get the box office running. And it was really quite a crunch, but it's a fun crunch.
How do you draw big names like Tim Daly, Judd Hirsch, Alfre Woodard to Dorset, Vermont?
Well, you know, I think it's been a combination of things. It started out when I took over the festival a few years ago. I just was relying on a lot of my colleagues. I was from New York for 25 years. I lived there and worked there. And so people were willing to come up and kind of throw their weight behind what we were trying to do. But I also think that having some of the new plays that we bring in, we do a lot of development. We're becoming quite a national incubator for new plays. Many of our plays have gone on to Broadway and a lot of the theaters across the nation. And that attracts talent because they're very interested in working on something new that is exciting to have writers like Teresa Rebeck or Michael Christopher, or this year we have Leslie Avazian. We're doing a new play of hers as a premiere. And the talent that they have relationships with comes in and they come on board, and it's a wonderful environment for them to explore a new play. And then often many of these plays go on and end up in New York or elsewhere. So it's sort of the old-fashioned model that brings people to us, and they've had great experiences, so they keep coming back, which is really great.
So it's in some ways a little bit like an incubator for plays and for, you know, for both directors and for playwrights.
It is, absolutely. And, you know, the local community has really embraced that. I think they love being part of something that is, you know, where their contribution as the audience informs the development of the play. It's a really reciprocal kind of process, and it's kind of exciting. We do a lot of the, you know, more traditional stuff. We've, you know, from everything from Agatha Christie to a lot of the sort of current top canon of plays like, oh, Clyburn Park or Good People, those kind of plays that may have recently been hits in New York. But there's something that the audiences have really loved about being in on a world premiere of something. That's just, it's really exciting, and they feel a part of the process.
So give us one thing you're really excited for this summer.
Well, I'm super excited about our first main stage production. We're doing a beautiful play, Red, by John Logan, who is just a magnificent writer, and it's a play about Mark Rothko. And really about art, actually, you know, what is art, who gets to decide what art is. And we're so thrilled because Tim Daly, who came up last summer to do a play of Teresa Rebeck's, has just really wanted to play this role, and he's back with us this summer, and will be, he's just doing a tour de force job of playing Rothko, who's quite an amazing character. So I'm very excited about that. That's up on June 17th.
Dina Janis is the Artistic and Executive Director of the Dorset Theater Festival. Dina, thank you so much for sharing your enthusiasm.
Thank you so much, Jane, for doing this show on theater in the region. There's a lot of great stuff going on down here.
No kidding. And thanks to Dina, we're getting a lot of emails from people who are telling us about what's in their neighborhood, what they love, what they're excited about. Aaron in Callis says, I'm an English and theater teacher and moved from the NEK to Central Vermont 4 years ago to teach at U32 High School and run the theater program there. Little did I know when my husband and I bought a house in Callis that it was home to three theaters, the Blue Barn Players in Maple Corner, Quarry Works in Adamant, and Unadilla Theater in East Callis. Mark says, you know, the possibilities are endless in our little state. With all of this talk of plans to restore and revitalize the Moran plant in Burlington on the waterfront, let us work towards a permanent regional theater in Vermont's most diverse city. See you at the plethora of theater this summer. Pace yourself, Mark advises. We are talking about summer theater, hearing from you about what you love to watch from the cheap seats or wherever you're sitting, or sometimes you're up on stage. We like to hear your experiences. You can post them at vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition, or call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Michael Barnhart, director of Raw Shakespeare Company in Woodstock. Hi, Michael. You there, Michael?
I am.
Hello. Go right ahead. Hi. Tell us about your excitement for summer theater.
Definitely taking it down a little notch from the previous speaker, because we've just started up a little Shakespeare troupe in Woodstock, Vermont. And it's kind of my position that Shakespeare shouldn't just be, you know, for scholars and students and all of that, but it should be for everybody. So I've casted this with just residents from the area who love the language and love the poetry. And we've been running workshops and now rehearsals for almost a year, you know, just once a week, getting it down under our belts, and it's going to be a very interesting experience.
When do you start?
We are doing the last two weekends in June at the Little Theater in Woodstock.
And are you ready, Michael, or, you know, is this the last couple of weeks of the push to get ready?
Yeah, see, I liked when you were saying previously about, aren't there some moments when you're pretty darn nervous during these rehearsals? Oh, boy. You know, it's a lot going on. I mean, we're tackling Hamlet, which is kind of a tough play, and there's a lot going on. There's a lot of different plot points. But why I love Shakespeare is that he's not black and white. You know, there's a polysemy to his language. There's so many different ways to take a plot, to take a word, to take a line. And that's what we really want to highlight, that kind of inspiration behind these kinds of texts.
Michael, thanks for sharing that. Good luck. Break a leg, I guess I should be saying, not good luck. So I hope it goes really well with your first productions this summer, just coming right up. Let's go to Steve Stettler, who's the producing director of the Weston Playhouse. Hi, Steve. You're on the air, Steve. What do you got to say for us about summer theater?
First, I have to tell you, my first show at the Weston Playhouse as a college actor was Man of La Mancha.
Oh, so we could do a duet.
So we could do the whole score.
Good. I like to be Sancho Panza, just so you know.
Fine. I think I'd rather be Don Quixote. I was the priest the first time. But I fell in love with summer stock and with Vermont way back then. And like you, have kind of had it in my blood ever since. One of the things we love at Weston is that there's been such a long-standing relationship with the community. We're in our 78th season this year. We're the oldest professional summer theater in the state. And a number of our actors from New York have actually bought property and moved up and live part-time and some full-time in Vermont to participate with us. We also involve young people from the area in our shows whenever possible. We have four young dancers from our community who are going to be in our equity production of A Chorus Line this summer. So Weston continues to be a place where the Jane Lindholms and Steve Stettlers can start out, which is also a kind of exciting thing.
Yeah, I don't think you actually want me in your productions, but...
Well, we'll audition you if you like, but not today. It's, you know, it's just such a great tradition in this state, I think, for the people both on and off the stage. And since we all love this state that we live in, but we've survived a particularly long and somewhat isolating winter, I think the joy of coming back together and celebrating community together is really part of what's so special about it. And also because we can be isolated here, theater exposes you to so many different ideas and people and stories. Like Dina, we do world premieres. We're opening with a world premiere musical written by an established Broadway composer called Analog and Vinyl. We've got the actor Campbell Scott coming up to do a Vermont-based Uncle Vanya at the end of the summer. We have an Obie-winning actor, writer, doing her solo show for us, Dale Orlander Smith and Stoop Stories, in the middle of the summer. So as Dina says, summer theater in Vermont has branched out so much from the typical one-week stock of all the titles that you know, to actually being a place where our audiences can be the first ones to discover shows that are going to go on and have a life elsewhere. So it's everything from the classics to the brand new.
Well, Steve, thank you as well for sharing your enthusiasm. Break a leg in this summer season as well to you. Steve Stettler, producing director of the Weston Playhouse. And let's go to Jeffrey calling in from Charlotte. Hi, Jeffrey. You're on the air.
Howdy.
Hi, go ahead.
Howdy, that's me.
Yeah, you're there.
Okay. I'm calling because there's so much community theater in Vermont that gets a whole lot of love, and our family has been involved for about 20 years with Lyric Theater Company, Stowe Theater Guild, Little City Players in Virgins, and now for the last 2 years, we've been doing Shakespeare in the Park in Bristol and having a very good time at it. And
so,
it involves our entire family, actually.
So this is a whole family affair for you?
Oh, yeah. I met my wife doing at Lyric, so... Oh, yeah. But, yeah, we've got, you know, our 10-year-old, 14-year-old, and my daughter, my wife and myself are all involved. And that's what we do together. When we travel, we go to theater, right?
Oh, Jeffrey, that's wonderful. How very cool. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. We are talking today.
We're your local company.
Yes, you are my local company. I live about 10 minutes from Bristol, so I'm going to have to check that out. Appreciate it. We're talking today about summer theater. We're talking about what it feels like, why it's important to our region, and also just why it's something that so many people enjoy, either being, you know, in the audience and watching these productions, sometimes seeing your friends and neighbors, sometimes seeing people who you may have watched on television perform. And for the performers, for the directors, for the set designers, why it's something that you engage in. You can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we are hanging with the theater crowd. Last night's Tony Awards stirred excitement around the country for theater, and we're talking about the local buzz, what's being performed around Vermont during the summer theater season, and why so many people love it so much. If you have a summer theater experience you'd like to share, please post it at vpr.net. Go ahead and click on Vermont Edition, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Allison in Huntington says, my favorite repertory theater in Vermont is Old Castle Theater in Bennington. Last year, they moved to a new intimate theater space right on Main Street, and all the shows so far have been wonderful. Often accompanied by live music, the sets are always innovative and beautifully crafted, and the acting is superb. And Lindsay in North Hyde Park says, an exciting announcement from the Lamoille County Players in Hyde Park. In addition to fine local talent, this summer's production of Damn Yankees will feature air conditioning. Whew, that sounds like a reason to go. Let's go now to Kim Bent, who's the founding artistic director of Lost Nation Theater based in Montpelier. Kim, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Well, thank you, Jane.
So what do you like about summer theater? What makes it special for you?
Well, first of all, I'd like to make it clear that we're kind of an anomaly or a variation on a theme in terms of summer theater. We started out as a summer theater here at City Hall in 1989, and gradually we've expanded our season from April through October. So we used to do the standard thing of cram, you know, five or six shows into the summer months. And then since we're in residence year-round at City Hall, really the resident professional theater of Montpelier, we all at some point realized, you know, we don't really have to put ourselves through this. We could really space our five or six shows out over the April through October period and really do ourselves a big favor, you know, in terms of that stress level you were talking about.
Yeah, you sort of get the shoulder seasons. So does summer feel different to you now that you have, you know, a longer season and that you go from April through October?
Well, it does. It's a little strange to, you know, in the height of the summer when all this activity is going on, to have a couple of dark weekends in between shows. That still feels a little strange. But we do tend to honor the fact that, you know, it is a different season in terms of the choices of programs. For instance, the show we're about to open this coming week, Durang Bang, is our own collage of Christopher Durang shows. They're comedy shorts. It's six shows in one night. So we're looking forward to that. We figure that's a great way to start the summer off with a bang, so to speak. And then in July, we're running a musical review entitled Blues in the Night. So we're getting hot and steamy in July with Blues in the Night.
That sounds good. You know, you also run summer camps for kids who are into theater. And I don't know who caught the Tony Awards last night, but there were a lot of references to teachers and adults who really fostered a love of the arts and a love of theater in young people. Why is that something that's important to you?
Yeah, I really appreciated those comments last night. I took that personally because we have, over 25 years, as you might imagine, seen a lot of young people move through here. We used to do the drama program at Montpelier High School before we focused all of our youth programs here at City Hall. And so August we devote to youth theater. We call it our Theater for Kids by Kids programs. We do a couple of production camps, one for younger kids, and this year we're doing a treatment, our own original, of Little Red Riding Hood, that we're entitling Red, of course. And then we do a two-week production camp in August as well for slightly older kids, teenage, and so on. This year we are doing Peter Pan. So we have a lot of fun with that. The kids are fully supported in with the professional design, and the ratio of professionals working with the number of kids is really high. I mean, you know, so we're really kind of proud of that, and they get a quality experience and actually get to perform their shows a number of times for the general public as well as for family and friends.
That's very cool. I love hearing about that, getting kids interested in it and sort of giving back in that way. Kim Bent is the founding artistic director of Lost Nation Theater in Montpelier. Kim, I hope this season goes off without a hitch and on into the fall.
Thank you very much.
We are today talking about summer theater. We're hearing from so many of you, and you're sharing what you love about summer theater. Caleb in Calla says, for the past 35 years, I've had the extraordinary good fortune to live in Cabot, only a mile away from one of the finest summer playhouses in Vermont, the Unadilla Theater in Calla. The owners have been staging classic and contemporary plays since 1982 in what was once a dairy and later a sheep barn, a little off the beaten track, but on a beautiful old farm on which Bill and Anne still keep sheep and Highland cattle. There are a lot of very fine summer theater programs around central Vermont, but I like this one the best. And speaking of barns, let's go to Peter Boynton, producer of the Skinner Barn Summer Theater in Waitsfield. Hi, Peter. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on the show.
So describe your barn. What's the experience like there?
Well, we have an historic dairy barn. It was built in the 1800s, and I bought the property in the late 1980s when I was still based in New York. Like Dina, I was in the city for 20 years, working as an actor, doing Broadway and daytime television and all of that. But I renovated this barn with an eye towards someday producing theater in it. And we're about to have our 12th season of summer theater. And we are the quintessential, I've got a barn, we've got a trunk, let's put on a show. You know, we're in the Mad River Valley, so it's a resort setting. We look right at all three mountains that make up the ski areas here. So my Broadway friends can't wait to come up and spend a month with us here. And
so that's the draw from Broadway, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a big, you know, I selfishly put on this season every year because I get to see my friends from New York and get challenged again as an actor as well as producing the shows. But they can't wait to get up here and, you know, be in a resort setting for a month and get out of the city for a little bit. And of course, our local actors love it because they're rubbing elbows with, folks are doing this as pros day in and day out, and there's a lot of mentoring that goes on. So it's a wonderful experience.
One of the things that you're doing this summer is the play Violet. Now, Violet had four nominations in the Tony Awards last night, including the Best Revival of a Musical. And Sutton Foster, the star of the play, was up for Best Actress in a Musical and performed at the Tony Awards. That's a play that's on Broadway and one that you're performing. How did that work out?
Yeah, it's a little unusual. This is the second time in 3 years that we've had some sort of an unknown mind meld with the Roundabout Theater. Two seasons ago, we decided in December, before the summer season, to do The Mystery of Edwin Drood. And then in January, they announced the same production starring Cheetah Rivera. And actually, our director, Nick Corley, of our production up here, ended up in that Broadway cast. So here we are again. Not too many people know Violet. It was written by Janine Tesori, who wrote Thoroughly Modern Millie and Shrek the Musical. She's pretty famous now, but this was her first off-Broadway show in 1997. And it's been on our radar for a while, and we said, what the heck, let's give this show a go. We announced it in December, and in January, again, the Roundabout Theater Company said, we're going to do the first ever Broadway production starring Sutton Foster. So it's actually great for us because now there's a lot more buzz, whereas people were saying to us, Violet, what's that? Mm. Now people know what the show is, and it's very unusual. Usually when a show runs on Broadway, they pull the rights and mm-hmm. can't do it anywhere else. So we're very fortunate that they said, nope, proceed as planned. And if you want to see Violet, you can see it at the Skinner Barn or at the Roundabout in Broadway.
Yeah, take your pick.
Kind of fun.
What surprises people, do you think, about the quality of theater here in Vermont?
Well, I think it depends on which experience you're having. You know, community theater is fantastic. There should always be community theater, and I think the opportunity for, you know, folks in a community to get up and exercise their theatrical legs is fantastic. I think it's also true that some of the theaters that are able to mix in prose, whether they're coming from Chicago, L.A., New York, wherever, a lot of folks come here and they say, wow, look at this beautiful old farm property, and they come in, oh, it's a barn, and then they see high-quality theater. You know, I think that's a surprise because they don't necessarily expect to find it in a small town in Vermont, and that experience that we see here, and people say this to us, I know is repeated at many theaters, you know, around the state. So I think the quality of the work surprises a lot of folks. If they're coming up from a metropolitan area, you know, they'll probably put their criticism in their back pocket and just go have fun, and then they go, wow, this is much better than I was ever anticipating.
That's Peter Boynton. He produces the Skinner Barnes Summer Theater Series in Waitsfield, created it himself. Peter, I hope this season is fantastic for you as well, and thank you for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you.
We're also hearing from other people about what they love. Sharon at the Chandler Pride Theater emailed to say, Vermont Pride Theater's fourth annual summer festival at Chandler takes place this July 18th through 27th, presenting three Vermont premieres. I won't list them, but you can find them online. She says, Vermont Pride Theater at Chandler and Randolph is the only place in the state where the concerns and issues of LGBT Vermonters are presented on stage. And let's go to Judith Matheson in Stowe, who's president of the Stowe Theater Guild. Judith, you got a couple of seconds. What are you excited about this summer?
Hi there. I am very excited about our season. It's all musicals, but all very different shows, starting with the title of show, which is maybe obscure to some people. It's actually called Title of Show, and it's a true story about two writers who hear about a musical theater festival and have 3 weeks to put on a show. So they write about writing a show. So, anyway, that's very obscure. But then we go from title of show to On the Town, The Secret Garden, and Kiss Me, Kate. So that rounds out our season.
Sounds like it's going to be a wonderful season. Thank you for sharing that with us. Got a note from Laura Dewey, a board member of the Vermont Children's Theater, who says, pack the kids in the car and take a road trip to the Vermont Children's Theater in Lindenville. There are three different musicals this summer, and every one of them has a Saturday matinee. The musicals are all performed by local children from 7 to 18 years old. And Rebecca Bailey of the Hopkins Center for the Arts at Dartmouth says, one of my favorites is just over the border in Hanover. Each August, the three-week Dartmouth Residency by New York Theater Workshop. It's one of the nation's leading theaters for developing new plays, and this is the 23rd consecutive year that it's spent 3 weeks up at Dartmouth. This summer, we're especially excited to see a work-in-progress staging of Hadestown, a folk opera by none other than Vermont's own Anais Mitchell. Again, you can share your theater stories, your experiences, or what you're most excited about this summer, whether you're going to be in the audience or perhaps you have a hand in the production. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. Coming up, we'll have an exit interview of sorts with the outgoing president of Champlain College, David Finney. He's guided the Burlington campus through some very big changes. We'll hear about them next on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Champlain College in Burlington may still have an association for some people as a modest two-year degree program, but a massive curricular change has taken place at Champlain in the last 20 years, accompanied by equally dramatic changes to its campus. At the end of this month, the president of Champlain College, David Finney, is stepping down. He led the college through the last decade, and he joins me now to talk through where Champlain has been and where it's going. President Finney, nice to talk with you again.
You too, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So the college describes its curriculum as three-dimensional, and you had a big hand in that. Three-dimensional, what does that actually mean?
It means it's got three essential components to it. The hallmark of Champlain has always been the professional focus of its degree program. So you can major in business or IT or social work or education. And then beyond that, however, is the liberal arts component. And so we created a four-year interdisciplinary core that's highly sequential and very rigorous, because if we're going to prepare students for the world of work, in addition to the technical skills they need for a particular job, it seems clear they also need to be able to think creatively and critically and to communicate effectively. So that is what the core is about. And then we started also a life skills component, so that when students graduate, we want them to be financially literate. We want them to have participated in community service, because we expect that they should give something back to the communities they live in. And we want them to be sophisticated about managing their careers. So those are the three aspects of life skills we teach.
I want to talk a little bit about the life skills set there, because, you know, it's something that some people might say, well, why does a college have a responsibility to make sure that its students are financially literate, for mm-hmm. example? I mean, why isn't that something that either the parents should do or the students can take on themselves? Why is it something that Champlain feels like should be an integral part of the curriculum?
Well, we did it because students, in fact, are not financially literate. And it seems that parents and children don't spend all that much time talking about money and how to manage it. And so we put it in based on feedback from recent graduates. And it has turned out to be, I think, the most popular aspect of the Life Skills program. And we believe, based on student feedback, that it actually saves our graduates from making mistakes that otherwise they would have made.
They tell you that after they've left and coming back?
Yes.
Like what kind of issues?
Well, they one of the exercises we do is a game, This Is Your Life. So we the juniors and seniors go into the gym, and around the edge of the gym are all of these tables: the grocery store, the landlord, the pet store, the record store, the stereo store, and everything. And when they walk in, we say, "What's your major?" And we give them a piece of paper, and it tells them what their income will be. So then they go around and they set up their life. They rent an apartment, they buy a car or lease a car, they do everything they need to do. And then they go to the center where we do an accounting. And the typical result is we tell them they are bankrupt. And so then they have to give back the pet and downsize the car and take the smaller apartment. But in the process, they figure out what it means to live on a budget and in fact, what their budget's likely to be. That exercise alone has saved them a tremendous amount.
You also have a program called BYO Biz. You
know,
talking about entrepreneurs here and thinking of starting your business. Can you talk a little bit about what that is all about?
Yeah, one of the things that struck me when I arrived at Champlain was I met a number of students who already owned a business. And I mean, I had been in higher ed 30 years and really hadn't encountered very many students. And so it seemed to me to be something in the water at Champlain. So we decided to try to ramp it up. And so we recruit students nationally from high school who already have a business. And, you know, it's not a tremendous number. We get probably a dozen a year. And some of those businesses don't make it. And in other cases, we'll have sophomores and juniors come in and say, "I have an idea." And we sort of coach them into having a business. We graduate between 10 and 15 a year who have businesses. Some of those are located in Vermont. Some of them now employ Vermonters. Our goal was over the course of 20 or 25 years to have a number of businesses here that employ several hundred Vermonters. So we're tracking toward that, and hopefully that'll work as a way to contribute to the local economy.
So that's a piece of it there, is contributing to the local economy? Because as you said, it's a small cohort.
Yeah. It's a big piece of what we talk about at Champlain and how we define ourselves. Most of our traditional freshmen do not come from Vermont, but more than half of our graduates the last several years have taken jobs in Vermont. There are several companies around that rely heavily on us, particularly in tech fields. And we think a college ought to be of a place, and our place is here. And our role is to do everything we can to make this part of Vermont economically viable.
I'm speaking with David Finney. He's the president of Champlain College in Burlington. Announced a while ago that he's going to be stepping down at the end of this month. So we're talking about some of his accomplishments over the last 10 years. You just mentioned tech fields, and that's really an area that Champlain College has defined itself as a leader in. I mean, the gaming degree is one that is nationally known. Why is that something that Champlain has been able to carve out a niche in?
Champlain has a history of being both flexible and innovative. And we, for whatever reason, were able to see an opportunity and capitalize on it more quickly than many places. We try not to have too much bureaucracy. Maybe that's part of it. But we also encourage creative faculty to really put forward their ideas. And they know, based on history, that if they do have a good idea, the college will run with it and give them some support and let the idea come to fruition. And so in the area of gaming, in the area of digital forensics and several others, those have really proven to be good areas for us. They help us recruit students. They're growing industries. The skills are transferable to all kinds of other, in this case, software industries. And so it's proven to be a remarkably good move to develop some of those areas for Champlain.
I mentioned when I was introducing you that Champlain College has gone through a lot of changes in the last two decades, including what kind of school it is. I mean, it was a college that was known for two-year degrees. You didn't offer any four-year degree programs.
No, not until 92.
And now you offer four-year degree programs. You have graduate degrees.
Yeah.
How has the college made such a dramatic shift in such a short time?
Well, when Bob Skiff was president in the 70s and 80s, and so Bob, as he was leaving, put in place the first baccalaureate degree programs. Over the next decade, more and more were created and evolved. And it was in part response to growth of the community college, which was really taking away Champlain's historic niche. And so the board had made the strategic decision that baccalaureate-prepared students could do well here in Vermont and that Champlain should begin to prepare them. And so that happened. And the place then really evolved pretty rapidly. There were a lot of high school graduates right around the turn of the century, and Champlain was putting up some new buildings, and it began to attract students from further and further afield. And so it evolved very rapidly, I would say, between 2000 and today, and has turned into what I'm very biased, but what I think is a remarkably good little college.
When you took the helm, what was your goal for the college, given that it had already sort of started traveling in some of these directions?
Mm-hmm. One was to continue to capitalize on the strengths of Champlain and to push that. One was to try to create the most complete education that we could for students. There's a big debate in higher education about whether it ought to provide marketable skills or a liberal education. It's a debate that we find to be reductionist. We think a good education ought to do both. And so that is why we created the core to complement the professional programs, and also then why we created life skills and that idea about being complete. It turns out that it makes Champlain very, very distinctive. In fact, unique among American institutions of higher ed. That has worked really well for us. Our applications in the time I've been there have nearly tripled. Students are coming each year from further and further afield. And those are changes we welcome as long as we can then place those students in jobs in Vermont when they graduate.
And you're finding that you can?
Absolutely. Yeah.
We were talking a little bit about the expansion and the changes in terms of what the college offers, but there's also been a huge physical plant explosion.
We've been
quite
busy.
Phrase it that way. Yeah, let me tick off a few. New library in 1998, mm-hmm. New student housing complex on Main Street in Burlington in 2003, Center for Global Business and Technology opened in 2004, Student Life Center built in 2005, mm-hmm. A new welcome center with a price tag of $15 million opened in 2009. And if you drive around now, there's still more construction and renovation.
Yeah.
It's a massive amount of expansion.
Yeah, for a small school, it is.
Is it sustainable?
Well, I think it's sustainable to the point where we need it. We're trying to right-size the campus for 2,000 students. There are two components of that. One is to make sure that we have the academic facilities that we need in order to offer an education that is truly cutting edge in the respective fields. And the other speaks to the larger situation in Burlington where we would like to house all of our students. I'm not a fan of a lot of the apartments in Burlington that that students live in. And we think, first of all, we can do better, but also we can gain just a tad more control over the whole sort of college scene if we're able to do that.
So that's still moving forward.
Yes.
How else is Champlain College moving forward into the future?
Oh, we've got a lot of ideas cooking. Don Lackman has a menu of things to choose from. And I think as long as Champlain continues to be highly distinctive, very personal, and very, very Vermont-centric, it's going to thrive.
And what about you? Are we going to see your name pop up again somewhere?
Not soon, anyway. I'm looking forward to really downshifting and lowering my golf handicap and taking money from friends who've been taking money from me for years and doing some things like that.
So was that the impetus for stepping down now, just a change of pace for you?
It's a change of pace for me, but I think more importantly, it's time for Champlain to have a new set of ideas. I think any institution thrives when it is working its way toward a series of goals that people have really bought into. My best ideas are on the table, already implemented. Time for a shift and time for Champlain to jump to the next level.
David Finney is the president of Champlain College. He is stepping down at the end of this month after nearly a decade of leading the college through some pretty big changes. And all golfers in the area, you have been warned. He's going to be on the links. President Finney, congratulations on your upcoming retirement, and thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you, Jane, very, very much.
It cues us to head to school, not Champlain College this time. It's Summer School, Vermont Edition's annual series where we learn some useful or not so useful skills from enthusiastic experts. Today we're going to get a lesson in whistling from an actual pro. Our teacher has won the International Whistlers Convention Teenage Grand Championship and came in second in the world last year in the adult division. He just graduated from Middlebury College and is headed back to his hometown of Tokyo, Japan. But before he left, he offered some tips in the fine art of whistling.
Hi, my name is Yuki Takeda. I am a whistler, a musical whistler. I started whistling when I was 10 years old because all my friends could whistle, but I couldn't whistle. If you have no idea how to whistle, this is the way to do it. You say he and then you. And what you want to do is to intensify the hiss noise that you get from the H. By shaping your mouth correctly, you can amplify it so that it would sound like a whistling. The most important thing is where you put your tongue. So the tip of your tongue must touch your lower teeth or your lower gum in the front. Both sides of your tongue must be touching the upper back teeth. And then you fold your tongue a little bit vertically so that it would make a path of air in the middle. And then you want to whistle downwards, not straight forward. That's the key. So if you've been whistling and you've been hearing this wind noise that's almost whistling but not there, if you whistle downwards, you'll be able to get the note in 5 seconds. My one and only policy about whistling is that if I am annoying someone, then I would not whistle. So I ask everyone around me to tell me to stop whenever it's annoying, because whistling should be a happy thing, not an annoying thing. So these are different techniques that you can use for whistling. Glissando. Trills. Inhaling and exhaling. And double tones. And I've been trying to incorporate whistling into beatboxing recently, which sounds like... I am wanting to be the whistler who changes the image of whistling. Whistling has been a performance or a show content, but not really been perceived as a musical instrument. You cannot not be happy when you're whistling. And if everyone's whistling, the world should be more peaceful.
That was Yuki Takeda, who just graduated from Middlebury College with a lesson in whistling. Next week on Vermont Edition's Summer School, How to Fly a Plane. Got something you'd like to hear in summer school? You can send a note to vermontedition@vpr.net. Summer School airs every Monday during the nice, warm, sultry months we've got here in Vermont. That'll do it for today. Tomorrow, we'll lie back in the hammock and pull out a good book. Speaking of sultry weather, our annual summer reading show is upon us. We're going to get some expert recommendations for new books to try this summer, and you can share your own recent favorites or old standbys. Write to vermontedition@vpr.net and join us for the show tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sage Van Wing, with production assistance from Tim Johnson and Catherine Hayes. Mary Williams directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.